a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they've developed to move forward and live their best lives. I'm Jenny Taylor.
And I'm Michelle Scharf. We are back with
part two.
Ben, Moa, and Christine. So Christine, do you go by Allison? Is that your last name?
Well, that was my last name when we got married.
I think that's part of the story. Okay, I don't know about all of you, but
something's coming.
Last week was like almost an hour that only got us to age, 21 or 22? Yeah. So we've got another 45 minutes today to go through two decades. So Ben and Christina, thanks for joining us again.
Quick recap. Ben, Moa is a young, beautiful, exciting, engaging personality, big smile, great big heart, but he's
incredible athletic skill.
Incredible athletic skill, but also he's been raised to be a gang member and he has carried out crime in his life. He was selling drugs, using drugs.
Shot someone when he was age 12, got put into a youth detention center for 4 years.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot going on at a young age.
A lot going on at a young age. Ends up getting shot at a family wedding of two rival factioning gangs, but basically they're all family members. And they end up back in California.
They married, having a baby,
and they hope to have things settle down and just he's going to go work for Christina's dad and hopefully have just a regular, you know, normal, boring
life.
But
then this athletic ability continues to show, and he's recruited to do some football playing for a junior college. And I think that's about where we left off. Jumping into his college career.
Yeah, he did go to the junior college, and the head coach there was excited to see him. And he said that he broke a lot of records there and was an All-American and just excelled. And then his coach from Utah, who he has a great deal of respect for, Coach McBride from the University of Utah, calls him up and says, we want to recruit. Christina is not excited about it.
She's not wanting to go back to Utah. Christina, tell us where you are in your mind there. And then you're going to get us through college, from college to the NFL to today. That's a lot of years and only about 40 minutes. So we are eager to hear what happens next.
Let's go.
All right. Okay. So going back to Ben's being recruited now out of the junior college, and Coach McBride, he wants to come to Modesto and do a recruiting visit. And I'm already have like a bad taste about the whole state of Utah, which makes no sense. But everything about Utah was wrong. We're not going. And Ben and I, you know, we're, like I told you, we're putting God first now in our lives. So we're literally praying about a decision. And so the USC coach is supposed to come to my house in Modesto and do a recruiting trip. And then the next day, Coach McBride is supposed to come. And it just happened to be that for some reason, the USC coach calls Ben and says, you know what, we're not going to be able to make it. And immediately Ben looked at me after the phone call and says, Christina, I have this feeling that I need to go back to the University of Utah. I want to fix my name and I want to carry my grandfather's name. And I was like, Ben, are you serious? And so the next day, Coach McBride comes. I actually have the same feeling. Like, you're right. We do need to go back to Salt Lake. We need to go back to the U. And so from that time until we come back to Salt Lake, we go through the legal process of changing our last name. So Ben wants to carry his grandfather's last name and show respect to his grandfather, bring a good, like, you know, when people hear the last name Moa, he doesn't want them to think of dad or gangs or things like that. He wants them to think of something else. And so that's what Ben wants to do. And so that's what we do. So we come back to Salt Lake. We spend 2 years here and at the U. It is an amazing, wonderful experience. No issues with gang-related activity, none of that. And we have our son with us, our first son. I get pregnant before he enters the draft with my second son. It's a great time. So coming back to the U was definitely the best decision. He got to play for Coach McBride, and he also got to play with Coach Meyer. And yeah, it was great.
And everything, I mean, you're staying out of the gangs, you're staying out of the drugs, you're staying out of the trouble. It sounds like you found a path in your life. What does the NFL draft experience look like for a young family? And you got one child, right? And then a second child on the way. That's a lot. Like, what is that like in terms of kind of the head game of getting there? I'll ask either of you, Ben. Okay. But I also, like, as a mom, I want to know, Christina, what's that like for you? Like, I was married to a guy that ran for office while I was pregnant, and that was overwhelming. That wasn't the NFL.
Yeah, so it was a lot. I mean, he obviously had to, like, train a lot. And so luckily, Mike, my brother, had already went through the process of going to the NFL. So we kind of, like, knew kind of maybe we shouldn't do this, maybe we should do that. So I knew that it's hard. So I said, if you want to do this, you need to move me back to California with my mom, because I know it's a lot.
So he can focus on the training and everything.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So I moved back to Modesto with my two boys, and Ben, he had to get an agent. And that's a reason why that whole story came out on ESPN, was because Ben's records were, people could still see what he did. And, you know, that's kind of like a bad light when you're wanting teams to spend a lot of money on you.
Right.
To come and play for them. And so I can't really remember. I mean, Ben was doing really well, obviously, at the U. He was like up for some award. Now I can't remember what it was. It was for some tight end award. And there was, you know, a lot of like talk about Ben, but then a lot of people knew his past. And so his agent was like, let's just tell a story. Let's just tell a story. So there's no secrets.
Okay. I love that. I love that. And I'm thinking, like, how this all plays into resilience. How many times, Michelle, have we talked about a huge component of resiliency is not just sweeping it under the rug?
That's right.
It's being about open, owning it.
Owning it.
Good or bad. The highs and the lows, the ugly and the good. And so that's interesting to know that was the impetus behind the ESPN special. It wasn't a, hey, look how cool my terrible background is. But, hey, let me just tell you what my background is. And look where I am now. Let me have a clean slate. Let me have a chance to move forward.
Or not a clean slate.
Well, I guess.
Let me see. Let me be honest about where I've been.
And still give me a chance to have something ahead.
Right.
I guess that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that. And that is a big part of resiliency, being able to own it up and be able to authentically accept where you're at.
Yeah. And own that your past is a part of not only your present, but your future ambition and goals.
Absolutely.
Exactly. So, that's kind of where we ended up. I went back to California. He didn't get drafted like he obviously wanted to, but he got picked up as a free agent to play for the Miami Dolphins. And so he went to Miami. He lived there like with the rookies. So he lived like in this hotel, and I would come out with the boys and we would visit. We would come and like only come and stay for like a few days and go back home. So it was really hard. It was really
So home is California for you, but home is Florida for him. I mean, that's resilience right there in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was hard. The NFL life is definitely hard. I don't want to say for everybody, but I'm just speaking for Ben, right? So talking about how he grew up and like kind of like how fast like his life changed drastically from like one way to another without really having a lot of, I don't want to say like he didn't have a lot of standards for his life, but like he didn't really know who he was, maybe I should say, because he was kind of like just doing what people wanted him to do. When he was younger, he did the gang life because that's what he thought everybody wanted him to do. Then he had this athletic ability he didn't know. And then he saw that, oh, that pleased people. So I'm going to do that.
Right.
And now, okay, well, now I want to be a father because yes, we had two kids, but like he didn't really have like a lot of like, this is what I want to do.
So
like,
Ben, were just kind of allowing life to unfold for you.
You guys are all correct. Like, I'm a people pleaser in this mindset, and I didn't know that I was. I go with the crowd and I just try to be the best of whatever the crowd I'm with. And when you're doing that in the NFL, it's very, very dangerous, especially if you don't have any morals or standards. Like, I knew I wanted to do things you know, the cookie cutter church stuff. But when you're in the league, it's a whole nother animal. And I wasn't in the right headspace, so I would latch on to things that I didn't want to really latch on to, but I did.
Yeah.
So, like, I felt like I was better than everybody, but my mind was not right.
How long were you with the league, Ben?
I was in there for 3 years, and I think I could have lasted a longer time, but my mind, I know Jenny's goes to church, but in my patriarchal blessing, it says there a couple times that, what does it say, Christina?
It mentions, like, the only limits he's going to have are the ones he puts on himself. So, and I know that's, like, real basic for anybody in life, but for him, that spoke so directly to him, because looking back on his life, he's like, wow, like, really, I am limitless.
Right.
And for him personally, he was, like, self-harming himself in a way. He was making things harder than they really
were. I felt like I was self-sabotaging myself.
Yeah.
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 With just decisions that maybe for me, it would have been like, well, why would you do that? But for him, it was like, yeah, I'll do that. You know, it's, you know, we're just different. But if that makes sense.
Okay, it does. We're going to take a quick break and come back. So now we're looking at the NFL. You're there for a few years. I'm eager to know what happens next and what's happening now. I mean, NFL, that was still a while ago. That's when you're still quite young and starting your family. We'll be right back and jump into what happens next.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I'm curious how you came to the decision to leave the league or separate from the league. I'm not sure the right terminology there. What led to that departure from the league? And then what did you go into next? And did you continue to have in and outs with gang activity? Or did you stay out of that and stay clean and kind of stay on this new path that you'd charted for yourself?
Well, I'll let Christina go through this because it's a long, long, long draw. It could have been probably part four.
So Ben was with the Dolphins, and then they say that you get released. Basically, you get fired from your job. So Ben got released from the Dolphins right before the season started, and then they actually sent him to NFL Europe in the spring. So that means that they send you to one of their teams in Europe, and I don't even know if they still have this, but you go and play a season there. And so we did that, and then he actually got hurt. So then he was out for the whole season, like American NFL season. And then he got sent back to NFL Europe again in the spring. So this is like now like 2 to 3 years of like trying to make a team, trying to find where like where he fits in. So he the Dolphins, my NFL Europe, the New York Jets. And these few years, he's still struggling. You know, he's not making the best decisions all the time for himself, and also like a reflection on me and the two kids that we have. And so we're still battling to like, come on, like you got to do better, Ben. And he's like, okay, like I'm going to do better. And so he ends up finally, he played a little bit in the Arena League. I don't even know if they still have this either, but they had an Arena League in Las Vegas, a team in Las Vegas that wanted him to come play. And so we lived there for a little bit. And that was when my oldest son was 5. And so then he ended up getting released from that team for, I think he got injured in his chest or something like that. Anyways, so that was the last year that he had played football. So from my oldest son being about 5 until he was about, I don't know, maybe 11, those next 6 to 7 years were really a struggle for him. It was a struggle for him to find, like, where do I fit now in this regular, normal life, I guess? I mean, for somebody going from being praised for sports, and I know why people like to talk about that, it's because it's pretty amazing. Like, you know, it's like something that people just dream of, and he got to live it. And so now from people talking about all the time with you, and now you're just like a regular person trying to find like a regular job. That was probably the lowest I've ever seen Ben, even lower than possibly low, like when he got kicked off the football team by Coach Mack. low like that. I've never seen Ben so low.
That'd have to be a really hard transition.
It would be.
To go through that. How do you how do you make it through that, Ben, but also Christina and this young family you have? How does that not be one more thing that could very likely destroy you and your marriage and your spirits in general?
Yeah, and that's where our marriage really did almost end. It came to a point over these next 2 years where, I mean, he tried a ton of things to try to fit in. So I would think, okay, like, this is the job. Like, this is what it is this time. This is for him. And then he just couldn't last. So about, like, when my oldest son was probably right when he's going to start junior high, I started to see less of Ben. Like, all of a sudden, he just wouldn't come home. And I'd be like, wait, where are you? And be like, oh, I'm going to stay down in Salt Lake, like, with my family. And I'm like, oh, this is so weird. Like, he's never done this before. And now I have three boys. And so I couldn't wrap my head around what was going on because, I mean, it's been so long since he played football. So why, to me, I'm like, why is that such a big deal? Like, you should be over it by now. Like, you got to find a place. And so eventually it started to be days where I wouldn't see Ben. And I'm like, what is going on? And at this time, my parents had moved here to Utah, and that would be a huge blessing for me because they were here for especially like emotional support and like just support to have around for me. But I finally, I don't know, probably had been months, like we're going through this where I don't see Ben, I see Ben, he's working, he's not working, he's in between jobs. And this thought came to me as I was driving, like, is Ben using drugs? Like, that really was, like, what I thought. And I called him, and I asked him. I said, Ben, are you using drugs? And he was like, I think he may have just said yes. Like, yeah, I am.
Interesting. So super just open question from you and open answer from him.
Yeah, and so then it, like, all of a sudden just, like, all made sense in my mind. Like, oh, that's why he's going to Salt Lake. That's why he's hanging out with, you know, those family members and those distant cousins and these people that we didn't really associate ourselves with much. And that is like this aha moment of, okay, Ben needs help. So I gave him an ultimatum. I'm like, okay, you go to rehab or you can't come home. Like, you can't be here.
And how was that received?
Bad, really bad. And it wasn't good. So right before this time, I was only going to have three boys because, you know, my life was kind of up and down. But there was this little stretch of time where during these 7 years that things were okay. And we were like, okay, let's have another baby. And so I get pregnant.
Well, you got to tell them about my grandma first.
Okay, so Ben's grandmother, before I got pregnant with my daughter, she tells me, you're going to have another baby. And I was like, lady,
you're crazy.
Don't understand. Yeah. Like, I am trying to just keep my life together. And I already have three kids. Like, I'm not going to have another baby. And she says, you're going to have another baby, and I really want you to name her after me. And this was, so Ben calls her grandmother, but it's actually Ben's grandpa's sister.
Okay.
And Ben loves his grandpa so much, and this was his very favorite sister. And so I knew that this would mean so much to Ben and his grandfather. And, you know, things were going okay, I thought, for this little bit of time. And I'm like, first I was like, you're crazy. But then time went on, and I was like, okay, let's have another baby. And she told me I was going to have a daughter. And anyway, she ended up actually passing away before I got pregnant with my daughter, and I get pregnant. And then now during this time, this is when this is all kind of happening where I'm like, Ben's not coming home and Ben's coming home. Ben has a job. Ben doesn't have a job.
And tell me what year this is, Christina.
This was in the year of 2012.
Okay. So we've come a decade out of college and a decade ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I'm about 6 months pregnant, and I am just like super like stressed out and a lot of weight on my shoulders, a lot of, you know, confusion of like, where is my life going? I have these children. I'm having another one. Ben can't seem to stay, you know, stable all the time. Like, he's too inconsistent. I don't know what's going on. And my parents, luckily they're here, you know, they're just always around. So I don't feel too lonely, but I felt lonely at the same time.
Absolutely.
Nobody understood. So then this is October and I'm due in December with my daughter. I go into labor 10 weeks early and I don't know. I don't want to speak for Ben, but this could have sent him like over the edge. Like, I don't really know. But after I had her, I mean, she had to go in the NICU for 6 weeks.
Oh my
She's
goodness.
About to be 10. and she's amazing.
It's interesting you say this could have sent Ben over the edge. Is it sending you over the edge?
It definitely...
I mean, you're the mom carrying all this weight and this worry, not to mention the physical side of pregnancy and postpartum and a baby in the NICU. Yes.
That's
over the edge.
Unstable.
That's over the edge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I don't know. Yes, I definitely want to say I was about to go over the edge, but maybe, and this is what really, what has always kept me, for me, and I'm only speaking for myself, were my kids. Like, my kids kept me going. My kids were my why. My kids were my hope. My kids were my reason. Without my kids, I would have went over the edge.
Like, I need to tell you guys, I was on drugs, and I was doing, like, she's making it sound was off and on. It was horrible for her. It was absolutely horrible for her. I was on drugs. I was selling drugs. I was doing everything that I wasn't supposed to
be
doing.
Okay, so, Ben, how
so
do you
back
keep
to the
staying out of jail
back,
and prison?
I was in jail.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was in. I was in and out of jail. I went to jail for having a bunch of drugs on me, and I had guns on me. So, like, I basically relapsed into that when I was a kid. I basically.
It's what you knew.
So, how do you pull yourself or get pulled out of that? How?
And then I went right into it, right back into the same state of mind. I felt like a sense of like. I don't know. The drugs were all so overwhelming. And then my last day out of jail, I come out of jail. And my last thing is, and I read a scripture when I was in jail coming off of drugs. I read a scripture that said something to the extent of, do what you can, and I'll take the rest of you. So I prayed hard as I could. I prayed like I've never prayed before for God to take away the craving of the drugs. So I can get my life back together and save my life and be with my wife. And the other thing was repentance. The repentance part of this whole thing was the thing that I used to repent, but I would always have something in the back of my head that I didn't repent for. It would always bring me back to this, like
it would
really
always draw you back in.
Yeah. It would always say, well, I didn't do this, so I didn't fully repent. I didn't fully tell my wife everything. So
well, it's that transparency to be fully open, whether it's with your wife, your God, yourself, to really dig deep enough to really get through that.
And I'm a firm believer that you're as sick as your secrets because I lived it.
Oh, wow. That's powerful.
And I was sick as my secret, and I finally just told my wife everything. Everything I could think of, everything that was in my mind, and I said, God, I'll tell her everything if you take that craving from me. And from this point on, the day I woke up is the day he took that craving from me, that drug craving, because I knew I was powerless to it. And I asked him if he'd take it from me, and I'll never go back, and I'll never hurt my wife again, and I'll never do this thing. And I don't know, probably 10 years ago or something, and I woke up with no craving. I told my wife this story, and I didn't have to go to rehab. I didn't have to do all this stuff. And
wow,
it's because God took it from me, and he trusted me to hold up my end of the bargain. And to think about where I was in the streets and selling drugs, you're not supposed to be a real estate agent if you've got a bunch of charges, right?
Right. Yeah. Or happily married or still have access to your children. Wait, we're going to take one more break. We're going to take one more break and come back. I wish we had hours and hours because there's so many layers to this story.
So many layers.
We've got about 10 minutes. We want to really hit home
we'll
the resilience piece of the last 10 years. You said, before we go to break, really quick. So have you been sober since that moment you made that?
I have been.
That's incredible. That's incredible. Yeah.
Sober.
Wow, Ben.
And
Christina stayed with you. Holy cow! I hope you treat her like gold every second of every day.
I tried though, and that's like this because he was in and out of jail during this time. Like he would get, I would get that phone call. You have a collect call, and I'd be like, oh my gosh,
not
are
again.
You serious?
Yeah.
Not again. And then, then we're in 2013. And it's the summer, and I'm on vacation with my family in California.
Okay, hold on one sec. We're going to go to a quick break and come back to this. Okay, and we're back. We've got the last 10 minutes to try to wrap up the last 10 years. Ben, you're sober. Christina, you stay with him. You've got four children. Your daughter makes it out of the NICU healthy, I hope.
Yeah, she's
okay.
Amazing.
You got four healthy kids. Amazing. I follow you both on social media, so I've seen now that you have athletic children who are doing great things in sports and college sports and getting to that age where they're leaving high school and chasing those dreams. Let's talk for a minute about resilience. We always ask our guests, what is resilience? What does it mean to you? You've obviously exercised incredible resilience that includes highs and lows, that includes secrets and then working through those secrets, that includes staying together and feeling like you're falling apart. I mean, there's books that could be written about everything we've shared today. First, we'll start with Christina, then I'm going to ask Ben, what is resilience? What does it mean to you?
You know, we tell our story, and then I know people hear it and think, like, why didn't that work out for my family? Or why didn't that work out for my parents? But there's been a lot of hurt, and there's been a lot of sadness in my home for a lot of time. And my two older children, they're the ones that remember the most. So not only was I hurt, but my kids were hurt. Even as they grew up, we're so open that my kids, I'm hoping, were able to heal from that. But because we're okay, like, you can ask questions, you know, you can ask dad, and my kids will tell them, even sometimes, like, dad, we were mad at you. You know, that wasn't okay the way you treated mom when we were younger.
And that's good to let them. I think, again, how much do we say resilience is transparency, honesty, openness?
Yes. And that's exactly what I was going with for that. I was like, for our home, that's part of the resilience, like being open about it, being honest about it, taking accountability. And I know sometimes that's hard for Ben to take when he hears, especially my two older boys, when they talk. That's hard for him because he has to walk through. Because he doesn't know. He doesn't remember a lot of this.
Right.
He has to walk through.
He didn't experience what they experienced.
Exactly. So for us, that was something that really helped heal, was being open, being honest, letting not only me, but letting the kids tell Ben how they felt. And for us, I'm so blessed and thankful to be where we're at now. And I know for a lot of people, it doesn't work out that way. But really, the whole healing process of everything is I also had to forgive myself, not because I made Ben make those choices, but I had to forgive myself for that was my life. Like, I chose that life. And I'm not saying, like, that was a bad thing. I'm just saying, like, I had to accept that. Yeah, I'm choosing
that acceptance. It's that acceptance,
And that was okay. And that's okay with me. And that's okay if people don't want to be my friend because of what I went through. And that's okay too.
Yeah.
Because that did happen. You know, there were people that weren't okay or didn't let their kids come to my house. And that's okay too.
Interesting.
But I had to accept it and keep moving forward and not be upset and not be angry because this is the life that I chose and this is the life that I continue to choose.
That's so much of resilience there. The openness, the acceptance, the two parts of it, that you can be angry and hurt with the other person, but there's also that personal internal side that if you don't resolve it on your own, you can point fingers all day at somebody else, but taking it in. And then Christina, what you mentioned about other people just might not get it and they might not be with you on this journey. And that's got to be okay too, that you can stick to what you know is right and good and your path and your choice. And not everybody's going to like that. So much good teachings of resilience and relationships and everything else. Ben, we're going to ask you, what is resilience? How would you define it?
Okay, for me, the hardest part of the resilient thing is, like my wife said, creating such a mess and then getting sober and having to walk through that mess and let people explain to you how they felt, that people, because it's super embarrassing and super, like, shameful to do these things and not remember most of them, but just to let everybody tell you how they feel and what you've done, and continue to just shut your mouth and listen and try to put yourself in the headspace of, like, let them do their thing and, you know, be humble enough to know what you did and be just be aware of everybody's feelings. And I know that I did that stuff and I know it's all my fault and I know that all of it was self-inflicted. So I controlled all the things that I did. Nobody did anything over me. It was all my fault and I take full accountability for it. That's the other thing, is like, just own what you did. For me, I had to own it because my wife thought she was crazy because I was such a master manipulator that I could trick her into thinking that I didn't do that. but she knew that I did it, right?
So
I had to, like, say, hey, you're not crazy. I did do that stuff that you thought I was doing.
Owning that,
yeah.
Owning the hurt, owning the bad choices, owning the despair, and still
and
being determined to stay together. Yeah.
Yeah, it's embarrassing, and it's embarrassing to the community, but I feel like I'm not going to hide anything from anybody. Age appropriate, I'm going to tell you what I did. Age appropriate.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to go to my little tip-top types kids and tell them that I was doing all this stuff, right?
Right.
But if you have a question and you're age appropriate, I'll tell you age appropriately what I did. I'll say substance abuse to kids that are in junior high or high school.
Well, and Ben, let's talk for a second. What I'm seeing is obviously the resilience of each of you individually, the resilience of you two together as a couple, resilience, the mindset of the physical side of this, the drug side of this, the gang side of this. I mean, there's so many layers. Let's talk for just a couple of minutes about the work you now do. You mentioned your tip-top tykes and your tip-top athletes. I know because, as we mentioned at the beginning of the first episode, my boys are some of your students. Talk about this mission you now have with today's young people and the role you see athletic training playing in their path that I imagine you hope doesn't have to look exactly like your path.
Right.
Yes. So my business partner is my Uncle Mace's son, Nate. So we decided to open this gym together. Nate was the head trainer at UVU College for 4 years, training all sports. And he called me one day and said, let's open up a facility and train the kids up north, because there's nothing like that up there. So we decided to do that. We trained about 300 kids, and we love it. We wanted to provide a place for kids to train, and just wherever level you're at, to level up from it. And the cool thing about this is someone in Lehigh just bought 40% of Tip Top, so we'll be expanding.
That's great to have a bigger footprint.
So we'll have one vest to a couple of different locations, which is a huge blessing for us. Remember, I told you I was forthcoming with the real estate thing, so I put all my charges together in a package and I sent it to the real estate commission, and I said, hey, this is what I did, this is who I am, this is part of my story, and this is where I'm at. I know you don't approve people that have criminal background to be a real estate agent, but this is what I want to do, and I feel passionate about it. And they actually reviewed everything, and they put me on probation 2 years ago, and they said I could do it, and I did it, and then that just took me on probation. So
that's awesome. Congratulations.
Awesome. So I'm also a real estate investor. We're building 200 townhomes in Bear Lake.
Call my brother. I'm sure he wants to buy in.
Yes, I do. So we do that with a group of my buddies that we're doing this project with. We also do storage units. We're doing a lot of stuff. We do a lot of stuff.
Well, I love this. We've seen you have resilience exercised in your journey, but as we've seen so often with so many of our guests, Michelle, it's when you take that journey and then dedicate yourself to helping other people either through their difficult journey or try to avoid the difficulty.
Right.
That's where you really find that magic of resilience where you strengthen the muscle and you're helping others.
I imagine, Ben, part of doing the athletic training, it is a leadership training opportunity, right?
Yeah. It is. So we teach them not only athletics, like we try to help them build their confidence and build their, you know, be accountable to something.
Well, you're building character. As a mom, I see when I get in there, there's banners all over that, mindset, quotes, different things, kind of that same thing that you mentioned. You had that special religious blessing in your life that basically said, you're the only limit you'll face. And isn't that true for so many of us, how we set limits on ourselves, whether consciously or subconsciously? I love what you're doing.
And you see it a lot in the kids, like self-doubt and I can't do it. And we try to basically change their muscle memory in their brain to not think like that.
Yeah.
We don't want them to think like that.
Absolutely. How have you been able to challenge that people-pleasing part of you? And have you discovered... For instance, you said real estate's a passion and it's something that you really care about. Was that something that you just got a taste of and then you thought, this is something I really want to do?
So real estate, I've always wanted to work with people and I've always wanted to own land and invest. And so another thing me and my wife do is we buy houses and we flip them.
Yeah.
So we do that together. That's one of our projects we do together.
So Ben, with that question, Ben has had to work on boundaries and what he allows for, like, himself and for other people and me too. Like, we
all
have to
be ongoing. You're never done.
So that was something that Ben has really worked hard on doing, like, what does he accept for his life and what does he want to give out of himself to others? Because Ben would give everything. Ben would give his shoes, his shirt, anything that anybody asked for. But sometimes I'm like, you don't need to do that today, Ben. Just save that for another time, you know?
Right.
Absolutely. Even in college, if someone asked me for my cleats, I'd give it to them. I gave a kid my helmet once, and I wasn't supposed to. For some reason, I just want to give and help.
And that's a beautiful thing, and it needs to have some boundaries.
Right.
I think
absolutely.
Both of us. Yeah.
I'm in the singles world, and one of the things that I learned about being single is that we have to have a sense of ourself, our self-worth, and our self-value, and we have to be able to love ourselves. And in doing that, we do need to be able to put ourselves first before we can truly serve or give anything to anyone else or in another relationship. And after those things, we need boundaries. We need to know what our standards are, and we need to know what the deal breakers are. So this applies in every area of our lives. It's I'm actually working on a coaching program to teach this to people because I think it's really a problem in our society in general that I'm seeing.
It was a huge problem for me. So the boundaries thing, because I, like my wife said, if somebody asked me for something, I'm going to do it without thinking about my wife's feelings or anybody else's feelings. I just kind of just do it for some reason. So I've been reading a lot of books on boundaries. We do a lot of self-help audiobooks, so we're trying to work on it.
Yeah, that book, Boundaries, is a good place to start. I've read that, too. Well, Ben and Christina,
incredible.
It's been amazing. I'll tell you the big takeaway for me, and I think that it applies to all of us in every area of our life. You are as sick as your secrets. That is a profound, powerful statement.
And true for all of us, and it doesn't have
Absolutely.
To be sick with addiction or sick with drugs, but...
No, it can be a lot of different areas. And being authentic with ourselves first is probably the most important step. But being, if you're in relationship, you need to be micro-truth, honest with that person
that you're... With your spouse, with your children, with
absolutely.
Your coworkers, yeah.
So powerful stories. I love that you guys are doing so well and that your family's together. And you two are both an energizing, beautiful couple to be around. And I love that you, Ben, have been able to figure out how to serve others after going through what you've been through and how to be able to maybe stop some cycles of drug use or a lack of having somebody to care about them and paying it back in the way that your coach has paid it forward for you. And now, or they paid it to you and now you're paying it forward, rather. I love the story so much. Thank you for being willing to come on and share this story with us. I know it took us a while to get you on, and I know there was some apprehension, but I hope that you'll be pleased with our final edits on this two-part series.
Just thank you both, Ben and Christina, for being so honest, for being so open and transparent, everything Michelle just said. It's always, always the case that we know people in passing, we see them, we live in the same community. And then we discover we have no idea what's going on behind the scenes. And that's what this show is about. And the more open we get, the more authentic we get, I hope the richer our lives and our relationships become. When we see the good, the bad, and the ugly, when we know what it is that's brought us to where we are, that we can hopefully not be judgmental, but have more empathy and say, oh, now I see why this matters to you so much. Or this explains maybe you're passionate about the other, whatever it is. But to everyone listening, thank you. Thank you for joining us with Ben and Christina Moa today. Thank you for listening to the podcast. We hope you'll find us on your favorite podcast platform and give us a like, a rating, and a review. We also really hope you'll be willing to tell your story and come join us on this journey of storytelling and authenticity and a bit of self-discovery along the way as we all strive to be relentlessly resilient. You can find us on social media at Relentlessly Resilient Podcast and email us at rrpodcast@ksl.com.
Special thanks to Kelly Ann Halverson, our amazing producer. And remember, whatever you do today, remember to be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their lives. Have a great day.
Take care, everybody.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.